Again, if anyone gets hungry in the middle when the food comes out, I'm not going to be offended if any of you decide to walk over and grab food. In fact, I might ask if anyone can save me a few hot dogs or hamburgers, so I don't have the opportunity to leave during the shiur and grab food when it comes out, because then no one's giving the shiur. And it's a little hard to do both at the same time. I think there's some halacha that made it into the Shulchan Aruch that you shouldn't talk while you're swallowing because it's
Really?
sakana. Oh yeah, Marissa,
That's fascinating.
you can use that for one of your speech shiurim.
Yes.
But we're not going to be talking about speech today. Instead, we're going to be talking about health, but not about physical health. But we're going to be talking about mental health in halacha, specifically obsessive compulsive disorder. There is a fascinating tshuva that we're going to look at from Rav Usher Weiss. Once again, I always don't spend much time on the biographical material, but it's here for your reading pleasure. Rav Usher Weiss is living right now. He is a contemporary 21st century rabbi. In the past, we've done a Tzitz Eliezer, we've done a Moshe Feinstein, we've done Rav Avadia Yosef, all who would be considered 20th century rabbinical figures, great poskim. But what we're doing this week, and as we've done in the past, we've seen Rav Schirnbach before, and now we're going to focus on another contemporary rabbi, is Rav Usher Weiss. Rav Schirnbach, I didn't expect a lot of people to be familiar with, but has anyone ever heard of Rav Usher Weiss? Has anyone ever seen him here in America or in Israel? Anyone have familiarity? I know Yitzi, you do. Rav Usher Weiss is an interesting figure because if you look at his little LinkedIn profile I made over here, you'll note that he grew up in Brooklyn. He had what to do with I think it was the Klausenberger Rebbe, and he is dresses like one, conducts like one, paskins like one for the most part as a Haredi posek. And what's really fascinating is when even though he would probably be more identified as Haredi than as modern Orthodox, the Orthodox Union, the OU, has, I think, some of an affiliation with him. I was doing a little bit of browsing around on the internet. And the OU, I think even recently, so Moshe Bein was in the picture. They brought him in, and they definitely, I don't know if he's on in any official capacity, but definitely the more right-wing segments of modern Orthodoxy like Rav Usher Weiss and have what to do with him. I know when I was in Shalavim, my first year there back in 2013, they actually brought us on a field trip to Rav Usher Weiss. And he, I think part of his acceptance in the modern Orthodox community isn't just his willingness to interact with it, but it also comes from his willingness to address modernity. He may not come out, he doesn't come out really, liberal on social policy or any of those kind of things. But as we're going to see from this tshuva, he addresses OCD. He addresses mental health and recognizes its halachic ramifications. So we're going to be looking at a tshuva from him. It's really known as when you want to talk about specifically OCD, but even mental health in general in modern shalos or tshuvos. This is, for OCD, this is your first stop. And for mental health in general, this is one of the primary tshuvas that you're probably going to be looking at when you want to give shiur on it. Look at source number two on the sheet. Classic modern Orthodox style, throwing in an article just to make it relevant. I think that's one of those things that I was told, David, you did 30-year smicha. So I'm told that this is one of the things that that they teach you in smicha. You're supposed to put some article at the beginning so everyone gets into it because Torah itself is not compelling enough as it is. So here we go. We're Yotzei. We have a CNN article over here. But actually, I think there's something very interesting in this article, and that's why I quoted it here. It's talking about a specific kind. Well, actually, there's a chakira. There's something called scrupulosity. There's a chakira if it's a subcategory of OCD or if it's a new mental illness all of its own. The basic idea is that people will be obsessive and compulsive about religious practice and religious beliefs. Look at the example it gives for Jewish practice in the last paragraph highlighted. Ultra-religious Orthodox Jews, for instance, follow strict rules about separating milk from meat, and some consider this tenet so sacred that they have separate refrigerators for meat and dairy. Anyone familiar with Apsak? Separate refrigerators, one for your chalavi, one for basari, one for milchigs, one for fleishigs. Is that? I've seen, you know, separate sinks has become accepted a lot in many communities, but separate
kitchens.
Oh, really? That's even a step further. Has anyone ever heard of separate refrigerators? I don't. Yeah. Okay. So I don't. Where? What kind of community have you seen?
Just even some modern Orthodox communities where they'll have a kitchen with two refrigerators, two stoves, two dishwashers, two sinks.
You know what, Rob? I think I'm gonna botch it up slightly, but I was listening to 10-minute halacha one time from Ari Leibowitz, who's now teaching at Landers. He's a very prominent rabbi in the area, and he said something like, "It's the two sinks. It's called the five towns chumrah. If you could afford two Mercedes, you could afford two kitchen sinks." And I think that's the point that you're bringing over here. If you can afford two fancy cars, you can afford two sinks for halakhic purposes. That was his aura, not mine. you need the space as well. Look, but it continues. Some people with scrupulosity develop anxieties around this rule, going as far as to avoid the milk refrigerator altogether while carrying the meat. Now tell me if you've heard of this one. Not only do they have separate refrigerators as a chumrah, but furthermore, they don't even pass by the dairy refrigerator while carrying meat. Okay, so that's not, because that's not even a chumrah anymore. I don't even know if the separate refrigerator is really a real chumrah either. But this would actually be classified as scrupulosity or a form of OCD, of obsessive compulsive disorder. So I just thought that was fascinating that the CNN wanted to pick up on, one example of how OCD would manifest itself in Jewish practice. An example it gave is some sort of chumrah that at least I haven't seen practiced, but you're pointing out is practiced by those who could afford it. Let me raise the question now. For people who can't have two refrigerators, do we know of anywhere in Judaism where OCD would most likely manifest itself? Okay, halacha, but where in halacha do you think it would be most prominent? So let's just define, I'll give an example of OCD. All right, maybe chametz. So, right, chametz is actually a great example. That's in the David Lichtenstein interview that you may have peeked at, that's later on. That's actually what he's addressing. But no, that's the big one. All the articles talking about OCD in halacha, for the most part, talk about chametz. People don't realize that a little crumb that doesn't reach the shear is not an issue. You know, if you find one little speck of a crumb on the floor, you know, there's no issue of bali or bali matze. Are there other instances where it could manifest itself? Generally, OCD would be the person would be afraid or have this compulsion to go back and fix something because they're afraid that they didn't do it correctly the first time. One example, just in a completely non-religious context, is did I lock the door? And then the person will go back to the door and check if they locked it. And after they check they locked it, they'll go back again. And it could be an entire to-do just to leave the house or turning off a sink. You don't know if the water is gone, so you go back to check if the faucet's closed. So those are just completely normal, these are instances of OCD that could occur for anyone regardless of religiosity. Now, how would these manifest in a religious context? Any specific areas of halacha? One example is chametz, that's perfect. Yisrael? The TLC, okay, did I wash enough times? Did I get up to the wrist? Did I cover my entire hand? Did I have the right shear of water? Yeah, Marissa, davening. Okay, excellent. Thank you, Marissa. And davening actually is the example that Rav Asher Weiss is primarily going to address. One other thing I'm going to bring up, which we're going to look at later, is Hilchos Nida. Women, as we know, they need to go to the mikvah in order to have relations. And one of the things that they have to do in order to go to mikvah is make sure they have no chatzitos, that they don't have anything interposing between their body and the water that they're going to be immersing in. If they have anything interposing between them, it could invalidate their immersion, and thus they'll still be prohibited from sleeping with their husband, and it's a biblical-level prohibition. It's very severe, a chi of kares. So that's one other area that we'll see hopefully towards the end of this year. One last preliminary source before we look at the tshuva itself is, again, another nice little monorthodox rabbinical shtick. Not only did I put an article in here from CNN, but now I put an academic article in here as well, just to bolster it up.
No fake news.
No fake... Oh. Right. This is academic, so it's true. It's backed up. If you look over here, he just points out an interesting aura that we were exploring before. Even though scrupulosity is a form of OCD that manifests itself in religious practice, anyone who wants to go get hamburgers and hot dogs, you're welcome to, but I'm going to keep speaking. Depending on the religion that you are affiliated with... depending on the religion that you are affiliated with, scrupulosity will manifest itself differently. So, for instance, he says in his journal article by Dr. Jonathan Abramowitz, a Muslim might obsess that his prayers were not uttered perfectly enough, because prayer is something that's very important in Islam. And if you go to the next highlight on the top of the second column, on the other hand, Judaism, Hinduism, and Islam, okay, he comes back to Islam, emphasize behavioral traditions and customs more than belief. This is a whole other shir that could be given, but when we think about Judaism, we primarily talk about halakha, we talk about practice, we talk about conduct. Beliefs are important, but beliefs are definitely not what we spend all of our time learning about when we sit down to halakha shir, gemara shir. But okay, you're going to say, "I beliefs are very important, right? If you don't have the right, you don't have the."
They're not really taught.
Kavana is a belief. You have to have the right thoughts when you're doing the
mitzvah. Okay, we're talking about like the tenets of the faith. So if you don't believe in the tenets of the faith, then you don't have the chelak in olam haba. You won't be allowed into the world to come. So the article, if you notice, it's written by a person named Abramowitz. He's Jewish, so I think he has an inside understanding. He says, some groups of Orthodox Jews, for example, emphasize the importance of both behavioral and belief-based practices. So we have certain forms of emuna that are tenets and prerequisites of the religion, but I think we spend a lot of our time talking about behavior, and that's a whole other topic if we want to discuss why we focus so much on the behavior and not the beliefs. Christianity, however, especially I think for certain forms of Protestantism, where all you got to do is believe in Jesus and then you're good to go, so it's very belief-based. In fact, the OCD would manifest itself in someone not being sure that they were Mekabel Ol Malchus Jesus correctly. I feel like we talk about Christianity and women's issues a lot in this year. I'm just pointing that out now that I think about it. Anyway, as everyone is finishing grabbing their hot dogs and hamburgers and hopefully leaves over maybe something for me to eat afterwards, someone wants to be kind of put one on the side, we are going to start our tshuva. So please turn to section 3, should be source number 4. We will now begin the Jewish approach to OCD. And as Marissa pointed out, the question that Rav Asher Weiss is dealing with surrounds primarily prayer. Talmud Chacham Muflag V'Yer Shemayim Marish Solom Mimikra Kosha Shel OCD Larov Eno Masuga Lahagos Bracha Kilchasa. Olikro Es HaShema Kilchasa. He can't pronounce brachas correctly. He can't read the Shema correctly. Ulafamim Nevak Huzman Rav Lo Holk Lahotzi Shem Karoi Vishal Agmas Nefesh Atsuma. And he spends and he wastes so much time trying to pronounce the words of the Shema and the words of the brachos before he eats or in davening correctly, but all to no avail. Ladasa Rovim Harovim Hamumchem. According to the Halakha doctors, Betchumze Derech Atibul Hishel Olam Lo Yachzer Pamayim Al Dibor Otfila. A person should not, the way that someone, the way to recover from OCD specifically, is that when one thinks that they messed up, or even if they know that they did not pronounce a word correctly, they should not go back no matter what. Even if they know that for certain. Otherwise, you leave a pischon peh and the OCD can strike.
But if you're not sure if you said... You go back, right?
So let's see what he's talking about. Even something more intense, he's talking about Shema, which is a chiv deraisa. On a biblical level, we have an obligation to say Shema Yisrael.
Does that mean that he like according to let's say like ischiv tefillah, it's like tachide dibur, it's like filled in. And, like,
we didn't even get to the psak yet. We're just laying down the scenario.
How would that manifest that like it shouldn't go back even if there's a chiyuv?
Oh, good question. Right, so that's the question. If there's going to be any heter, how is he going to fulfill his chiyuv? Excellent. That's the scenario. The scenario is there is a man who has OCD. He prays three times a day. We see he's very dedicated to religion in general, and he can't pronounce Shema without difficulty. And he's afraid. He keeps going back, thinking that he mispronounced the word. And sometimes he thinks he never correctly says it. What is he supposed to do? Especially noting that the method that his doctor suggested to him to recover from OCD is to never go back, even if he thinks or even knows that he mispronounced the word. But on the other side, on one hand, that's how he's supposed to recover from his ailment. On the other hand, he needs to fulfill his chiyuv of Shema. He needs to fulfill his chiyuv of say brachos. What is a person supposed to do when there's a conflict between his state of mental health and his obligation to fulfill ritual requirements? Do we have any way forward for a person like this? Do we see the halachic problem here? Do we understand the issue? We understand what the conflict is? Yeah, Yisrael.
Basically, the issue is trying to balance not being too excessive in being scrupulous without being too nagel on the other hand.
Not being too...
There are certain halachos that require that one needs to be machmir in, but how do you balance, how do you draw the line between being machmir and being like...
So that's not exactly the question here, but that's another important question, which is how do we distinguish between chumrah and OCD? I don't have an article in here on it, but I think I forgot what it was. It's one of the Orthodox health websites. They actually have an article on that. Not so simple. Okay, this is completely like I heard it from I have no source for this at all. So I hope it's true, but even if it's not true about this specific rabbi, then you get the idea. Supposedly, people asked me, it was a Chazon Ish, about the Brisker Rav, and I said, Brisker Rav had this chumrah and that chumrah, should we abide by it? And the response was that you have to be mechalik between the Brisker Rav's chumrahs and his OCD. That certain things that he did were not because he kept going back because of a chumrah, but he kept going back because he also had issues with OCD. So I don't know if the Brisker Rav actually got diagnosed with it. This is like completely apocryphal. I haven't seen recorded anywhere. It's one of those stories that I just heard many years ago. But I think you get the point. The point is that there's what to distinguish between being machmir and then going beyond that. What's sad sometimes is that when we see people being very pious and we think they're doing it out of tzitzkus and righteousness, sometimes it's just they have difficulties. For instance, one thing could be, there's another thing I read one time, that if someone has issue, if someone doesn't speak to a woman, you know, like a woman just comes over to him in shul and asks him, you know, where can I find the restroom? Where can I find where Kiddush is? Where can I find a sitter? And he doesn't answer her. It could be he's very machmir not to talk to a woman. It could be also that he just lacks the capability to talk to a woman and is afraid to talk to a woman, which is a completely different thing. I think we get the examples. Akan Dvarai. I want to go back to what Rav Asher Weiss says because he has more interesting things to say than I do. Now we enter Rav Asher Weiss's answer. Nir bezel alocha dereishis chovasil shel ish zel latzis kol hanidrash amnas limso mazur merapin machaloso l'shem kach mutter lo af lavor al mitzvas haTorah v'zos mechado treitame. Rav Asher Weiss right off the bat says, for the purpose of health, this man is allowed even to be mevatel mitzvah say. He's allowed to even refrain from fulfilling an obligation, a biblical obligation in the Torah, in order so that he can recover from his illness. Kvar be'arti b'mokom acher. So he's going to give two reasons, two formal halachic justifications for how a person who has OCD would be able to not go back, even if he knows that he mispronounced words in a particular prayer that he's obligated to say. So number one, he says, look in the highlight. The gray is highlighted; it didn't come out in color. The Rashaya Adam, By the way, I'll just clarify that in general for all these sources. I know when you open up the art scroll and there's like certain things in the gray, like the piyutim, especially on high holiday davening, and the gray is like things that we don't say. And when the chazan says it, we all get upset. So like here, the gray is good. The gray was actually highlighted back in color, and the color went away because I had a black and white printer. So you want to look at the gray especially. So, okay, reason number one. The Rashaya Adam Levatel mitzvos aseh kedishli pol le mishkav yichle. A person is able to be mevatel mitzvos aseh in order so he shouldn't become sick. That is a general principle that Rav Asher Weiss has proven elsewhere, and it's very well accepted, not just Rav Asher Weiss. You look further, you'll see Ramosha Feinstein in a source sheet says the same exact thing. There, and then at the end, look in the second comment on the last line. To kishem shemutter lo levatel mitzvah kedei shelo yichle, hu adin kedei lisrapos micholyav. Just as a person is allowed to refrain from fulfilling a biblical obligation in order so that he could prevent himself from becoming sick, so too he could refrain from a mitzvah aseh in order to recover from his sickness. And what's the mitzvah aseh we're talking about here? You have a mitzvah aseh. You have a biblical obligation to recite Shema every day. And he is able to refrain from fulfilling that chiyuv. He doesn't have to go back if he thinks he mispronounces the word, in order so that he could recover from his illness. That is reason number one. What do we think of that? Does that sound like a reasonable equation? Right? We have the alligator symbol on the tail. What do we have? We have bitul aseh. What? What was that?
Just say more than and less than
sign. More than and less than sign. I know. I just like calling it the alligator symbol. I think we know that. I mean, people on the recording won't get it because I didn't make the shape with my hand. They don't see that. But on one, right? Less than, as Marissa aptly put, is what's less than? Mitzvah aseh. What's more than? Sickness. Sickness or illness will take precedence and priority over fulfilling a mitzvah aseh. And what's the chiddush over here? I don't know if it's a chiddush per se, but yeah, Yisrael?
That OCD is considered to be a sickness.
Excellent. Now, why is that a chiddush that OCD is considered to be a sickness?
Because it doesn't manifest as a physical symptom.
Excellent. So that's actually what makes this tshuva very cutting edge, as you point out, is that we're used to thinking of sickness in halacha as actual sickness. But, you know, Yisrael, as we learned in the mornings here in the Kollel, if you look in Bamban Marlikin and the Mishnayos there, someone who is suffering from depression, or however we want to translate that, you're actually able to do things for him, and we do consider it like a sickness. So happens to be our Vusher Weiss is cutting edge in the sense that he's explicating that, but I think those ideas you could find in Chazal already. But we have our expert on Refuah B'Shabbos right here, so I don't want to say anything. If I say anything wrong, you'll correct me. That's reason number one. I think that's straightforward enough. Reason number two is where things get even more interesting, and this is where everyone who's in a kollel in the morning might have reasons to protest. Look at Os Beis. Afim Nemar to Oser Lav or Iser Kedis Rapos. Even if we say that, let's say this equation is wrong, you're not allowed to be over a mitzvah aseh, you can't be mevatel a mitzvah aseh in order so that one can heal. Shani nido didon. Our case is still unique. Shari imlo yisrape v'chalitz min ha-meitzar, yevatel mitzvos eila lo netzach. If he doesn't recover from OCD now, he'll never be able to fulfill his mitzvos correctly forever. Chokye gavna arminan. And in these cases, what do we say? There's a principle that we may know about, Efshir, if you listened during one of the Limudim, called Mutav Sheichal Shabbos Achas V'lo Yichal Shabbos Harbe. It's better to violate one Shabbos in order so that you can fulfill future Shabbosim Kil Chasa. So you can fulfill future Shabbosos the way that you're supposed to, by fulfilling the mitzvos, Shamor and Zachor.
Is it yeah. Life-threatening situations that you could desecrate the Shabbos, if it's life-threatening, but any other medical, I don't know.
Interesting point. So one point that could be brought up to disagree with Rav Asher Weiss's equivalency here is that in the case of Shabbos, it's talking about life-threatening illnesses. For life-threatening illnesses, you could be mechallel one Shabbos so that you can fulfill the mitzvah of Shabbos in future weeks. But who says that's the case for something that it's an illness, but it's not a life-threatening illness? OCD?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Very well. It doesn't seem that here he's talking about a life-threatening case of OCD, but duly noted. All right. But I think the case of Rush Weiss is not even, it's talking about even if it's not life-threatening, but it definitely is decreasing his functionality in general. Another point that might be brought up is that maybe this is only a unique halacha to Hilchos Shabbos. Maybe it's only for Shabbos that there's such a principle that I could be docha one Shabbos so I can practice future Shabbosim in the future. So that's something to think about, right? We had that whole piece from Rosalovichik that we learned about how Shabbos is really one chefsa, and you know you're violating it, so you can fill the next bit of the chefsa. We had a lot of fun with that one in Shir. Moving on, though, he quotes the Chasam Sofer as support for this. One moment. Did someone take my other sheet? I have the wrong sheet, but it's okay. It's all good. The Chasam Sofer, who preceded Rav Asher Weiss, and now he's citing him as precedent, had a similar case in which someone was a Shota. I don't know how precisely it manifests in this case, but the person wasn't all mentally, I don't know the politically correct way to say it, but wasn't all mentally there. And they wanted to send him to an institution that would help him become a pikeach and be able to function correctly. However, this institution was not run by Jews, and psik reisha, once he's there, he's going to be eating non-kosher food. Are we allowed to send him, this boy, to this institution that will heal him of his ailment? But on the other hand, he's certainly going to be eating non-kosher food when he's there. What do we do? So the Chasam Sofer says, "Chasam Chasam Sofer dim ay dekach ish siko lerafoso pshita da'afim nemar da'havi bechlau sfiya be'edayim v'osar min ha'Torah." Even if you're directly feeding him machosers, you're essentially feeding him the treif by sending him to this institution. Mikol makom mutter. This is still permissible. Why? Atu chayavim anu lashir shota pater min ha'mitzos. What do you think that we be chayved to make him remain a shota? And this is what is real. This sounds like his real concern is also that he'll be pater from mitzvos. Better to right now. He's a shota. He's pater from mitzvos. So what do? Let's send him now to an institution that okay, he'll feed him treif for a little bit, but in the future he'll be able to practice Judaism correctly for the rest of his life. It's a cost-benefit analysis right here. That's the decision that the Chasam Sofer made. And he says, same thing in art, benidon didon. Look on the second paragraph in the next column. V'kach nira gam benidon didon, demutar l'ish yokar zeh, levat el brachos v'kriya shema. The person who sent the question to Rav Asher Weiss, he also can refrain from saying kriya shema brachos correctly. K'dei l'srape v'yokal l'kai mitzvah el kilchasa n'dikto sehen. So that he'll be able to fulfill mitzvahs correctly in the future. So that's a very fascinating jump. The thing that bothers me the most is the extrapolation from Shabbos to other areas of halacha, which is you could violate one Shabbos in order so that you can keep all the other Shabbosim correctly for the rest of your life. So now here too, you should be able to not say Kriya Shema and Brachos correctly for a certain amount of time, so you'd be able to pronounce it correctly for the rest of your life. I'm personally not compelled by the second reason that he provides, but I'm curious to get your opinions on the matter. Do you find do we think Rav Asher Weiss as far as compelling? Do we want to argue on it? Yeah.
Well,
Let me ask you two questions.
Sure.
You don't speak Hebrew or read Hebrew. You're Jewish. You go to Shabbos and you have the sitter in your hand and you read the prayers in English. Is that the one that's correct?
Yeah, you can read in English.
Right. So if you cannot speak properly, you cannot pronounce the words, but you say them to yourself. Is that halakha correct?
So I want to point out something. It's not exactly what you're asking, but Rav Asher Weiss addresses this. Look a little later. We're going to skip ahead just a little bit. I actually want to conclude with this, but because of your question, I think we should bring it up right now when it's relevant. There was an interview conducted by David Lichtenstein, who is this fellow. He wrote these books, Headlines, that some people might be familiar with. Kind of what I did, puts an article at the beginning and then gives a whole halakhic discourse afterwards. So if you look at source number... should be source number 7 or source number 8. If you look in the highlight at the beginning, Rav Asher Weiss is... This is an interview on David Lichtenstein's podcast, and then I think he transcribed the interview. So we actually have a written what Rav Asher Weiss said after he wrote the tshuva in writing right here. So my response to those people tormented by OCD who feel that they cannot daven or bench properly is that not only do I paskin that they should move on because they need to heal, but far beyond that. When they do their best, they fulfill the mitzvah of tefillah. They even fulfill it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu shomea tefillas kol peh. This includes people who cannot really pronounce the words as they should. And look at this. This is a beautiful idea. Parents always understand their child. There's an idea out there that, and he says it's actually unique to the mitzvah of tefillah, that tefillah is about communicating with our Father in heaven, and even if one cannot pronounce the words correctly, when it comes to tefillah, when it comes to prayer, God will count that. It's not even just that you're okay, you fulfilled your mitzvah if you tried the best that you could.
It's your intent.
So, it's what?
It's your intent.
Your intent will be taken into account here.
Just to right. Clarify, is that only true for tefillah? Hashem still understands you?
It's a great question. He doesn't distinguish in this interview. My impression is that he was making a blanket statement for all of prayer. That if something falls into the category of prayer, no matter what level of obligation is, if you do your best and you try communicating with Hashem, despite the impediments that you faced, God is shomea tefillas kol peh, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what you mean to say to him. Okay. So that was reason number... So, all right, we did reason... Or just to quickly review. Reason number one to permit someone not to go back if they know they're mispronouncing the words is because this is therapeutic. In order to complete the therapy, he's not able to go back. Therapy, healing from a sickness, takes priority over a mitzvah saseh, even of saying Shema. Reason number two, true, what he's doing right now is usur, but it's in order so that he should be able to daven correctly for all future times in his life, once he recovers from his condition. The next reason, and this is like, I feel like this happens every year for some reason we do this, but he brings in the idea of Gedul Avir HaShema. Look at the second last paragraph on the left column. He says, Farve hisponati b'mash amr chazal. You have to go back to the tshuva. It's the second page in the tshuva. Farve hisponati b'mash amr chazal. Gedola aver l'shma. I've given a lot of thought to this principle. It's a principle in rabbinic literature called Gedola aver l'shma, that an avera, sin, that's done for the right intention, one could even get almost, one could get schar, one could get rewarded for it. Now, again, we talked about this a lot in previous classes, so I'm not going to elaborate a lot here. Note that he's only bringing in this concept after he gave halachic justification. He didn't first bring in this concept called avera l'shma and say, oh, there's something called as long as you have the right intent, even if you do an avera, you can do whatever you want. All right, everyone, it's a purge, do whatever you want now. That's not how it works. He gave halachic justification, and now he's bringing in something called avera l'shma. And he brings in the story of Yael, how Yael, also in Tanakh, also committed a sin, avera l'shma. And we're not going to read this part inside, but the point is that when you have no other recourse and you're trying to do your best, even if it comes to Naveira, God will count it still as a mitzvah. It takes a posseg with broad shoulders to apply the concept, and he's only applying the concept because he already validated his position halachically. He's adding this in more as just an additional idea that if what you're doing is with the correct intent and you're trying to do things with halakhically correct, then even if you fail in the end, God will still count it as a mitzvah. It's an interesting concept. We saw this brought up in the tshuva from Rabbi Chaim David Halevi, in which he was addressing a guy who was married to what he described as a more modern woman, and she wanted to bring him to the movies, and God forbid he would go to the movies, and in the end, after Rabbi Chaim David Halevi gave him a halakhic justification to go to the movies with his wife, he said, still, gedolah aver l'shma, you're doing it for shalom bayis, you're doing it so that you and your wife will have a good relationship. Right, so that's my heter to go to movies, right? Anyway, gedolah aver l'shma. Anyway, we're going to skip to the... Let's skip straight to section Gimel. Section Beis is a very similar idea, just instead of talking about tefillah, Rav Asher Weiss starts discussing the idea of brachos. And should one refrain from eating bread, so he doesn't have to say brachos amazon, so he'll make less brachos levatala? Should one refrain from eating a kedei sfia, which is a bigger shear, a bigger amount of bread, which would obligate someone biblically to make a brachos amazon? He comes out with the same idea in the end. The point is, he says, the yeshal linho kechol adam uchidarko shel olam. The ikar is, the person should be nohig, he should conduct himself the way other people conduct themselves, and he shouldn't be constantly going back. We come to section Gimel. And section Gimel is the shortest, but I think it has the most fun ideas in there, and definitely room for discussion. Amnam yeshal ayin ketzad yotzi es bnei beso bekiddush hayom. There's a question. You live at home. There's a man who lives at home with his wife and kids, and it comes Friday night, and he wants to make Kiddush. Even if he's allowed to make Kiddush for himself, and we found a heter for him to pronounce the brachos incorrectly. What should the rest of the members of his house, what should his sons, his daughters, and his wife do? How are they going to be yotzei? How are they going to fulfill their obligation of Kiddush on Friday night if he's not pronouncing the words correctly? We found recourse and justification for him, but it's another step to say that now he can fulfill other people's obligations if he's mispronouncing the brachos.
Why fulfill this chiyuv? What's the problem?
He did not pronounce the words correctly. So, look, let's go with the second reason, right? The second reason is the easiest to understand. We're letting him do something which is otherwise prohibited in order so that he could pronounce correctly in the future. So while he's still in this therapeutic period where he's doing something that's not inherently correct, well, we just found him extrinsic justification. So it's not going to be motzi other people. It's just going to be, we're just going to say it's okay for him. So what's supposed to happen?
But is he okay for himself?
So he's okay for himself.
So it's okay for himself.
It's not that's an interesting point. It sounds like he's not really yotzei, or at least we don't know for certain that he is. But we're not going to. But it's the difference between saying we're not going to hold him accountable. God will not hold him accountable if he mispronounced the words. All right. The first svar also that we brought in, which is, it's okay. You could be mevatel and say you could refrain from fulfilling the bracha, the mitzvah of the bracha, in order so that you can recover from your mental illness. He's not really, yeah, that's a good question. Does that mean he's really yotzei or is he not? So I would say for tefillah, Rav Asher Weiss would say he is yotzei. When it comes to brachos, I don't know if he extends the same idea there. Maybe brachos is the same idea as prayer. It's all talking to God. But so this person should not lain for the tzibur. But even forget about laying for the tzibur. What about in his own household? What should he do? How are his wife and children going to be yotzei their chiyuv?
You don't
want to
embarrass
them. Ah, okay, so we're gonna get to this in a moment. Ube'emes nira shemin haroi she'ishto tekai shebeitzo v'totzi oso yidei chovaso. Look what he says here. Remember we said he's more of a Haredi rabbi, but some of the modern Orthodox people like him? This might be one of the reasons right here. He says that it's better in this case that his wife should make kiddush and be yotze oso, and also be yotze, it sounds like from here, also, unless you disagree with the reading, she's also motzi her husband. She's motzi him in his obligation of kiddush. And if the kids are old enough, and there's boys, bar mitzvah age and older, then okay, they can make kiddush. But in the case where the kids are too young, it's better she makes kiddush for to be motzi herself and him as well. So that's a fascinating, depending on whose households you go to, sometimes the husband makes kiddush, the wife does hamotzi, or it can be vice versa, or sometimes the man does everything. So Rav Asher Weiss is going with the assumption that usually the man does everything, but in this kind of case, he's being matir even the woman to make kiddush. And so this is just an interesting point. So he's not doing it for social reasons. This is just a very practical way to make sure everyone fulfills their halakhic obligation. He's not coming mitzat feminism or anything. And now look at the last paragraph, and I think this is what makes the tshuva very beautiful. It's his recognition of the topic at hand. U'kisheyesh orchim b'bayis, yesho l'eskabar al b'ushasul l'vakish mehem l'kayesh l'hotzioso, v'espenei beso y'dechavaso b'glal ha'koshi sheyesh lo. He says, now let's say they're guests over, and he's going to feel humiliated that he can't make kiddush for everyone in the house. So he says, the person who has OC should try to overcome his busha, and not feel humiliated. And he should ask one of the guests who came over to make kiddush for him and to be motzi everyone in his household. Why? Because shame she'ena adam bosh ma'agavala gufanis shabahu loka. The same way a person doesn't feel any form of embarrassment, any form of guilt over a physical ailment that he has. Kach ein siba sheyevosh ma'agavala zu she'ein beina lebein machla acheres. So too here for a mental illness, he should not feel any form of guilt, any form of embarrassment. He should not feel humiliated, for there is no difference between a mental illness and between a physical illness in Rav Asher Weiss's eyes. And he's saying, I think, that he's leaving us off with that kind of message, that not only in halacha should we address mental illness as a bona fide illness, but we should recognize it as mental illness as something beyond someone's control, the same way as a physical illness. If someone breaks their arm, we don't say, "Oh, why do you have a broken arm?" Like people always usually go over, "Oh, why do you get the broken arm?" No, but someone has a broken arm. It's a metzias. It's there. It's beyond. Once it's broken, it's beyond his control. He wants to heal it. So too for mental illnesses, depression, OCD, whatever it might be. No one wants to have a mental illness. People have it. And the question is, what's the best way that we could address it as an Orthodox community? And Rav Asher Weiss is addressing it mainly from a halachic standpoint, how we can find halachic solutions to accommodate and best make these people feel welcome. But also, he's saying at the end that what's behind the halacha, that people shouldn't feel guilty, that people should understand that this is something that's beyond people's control, and certainly not blame them for the condition that they have. And you could look over here also in section number 4. We're not going to get too much into it. There's a chew from Egros Moshe, a chew from Tzitzel Yezer. Tzitzel Yezer says when someone overcomes a mental illness, he should make a berchas hagomel, just like he would make when he overcomes a physical danger. And if you look in the Shaz Tshuva Siach Nochem from Rav Nochem Rabinovich, he has a tshuva where he is mater social workers to go to the site of a terrorist attack or some other tragedy, because psychological trauma is likened to a real illness. That's what he considers and classifies it as. We already saw, just moving on throughout the source sheet to make sure we cover what we cover, we already just saw the interview from Rav Asher Weiss. And this comes up, as I said, also in Hilchos Nida. If you look over here, there's a question. There's a website called, I don't know the exact title, Nishmat's Women's Health and Halacha. It's a website where women could go on for resources and also ask questions to Yoatzot Halacha regarding the halachos and health in the area of Hilchos Nida. It's a very great resource. When I learned Hilchos Nida this past year, I would actually sometimes check the website if I wanted to look up the spark notes for a certain concept. Great website. And on this website, it was in 2008. They have it on there. A woman reached out and said, I'm stricken with OCD. And it's affecting my Hilchos Nida. Look at the highlights. I'm just going to read that. Not a cycle goes by that I don't have several freakouts. It has gotten to the point that it takes about 4 hours to prepare and immerse, not including the stuff I do the day before, shaving, etc., and the morning of, like cutting my nails. When I come home, I can't stop worrying that I might have missed something. And then she says, the saddest part is I know it's not right. And it's not halakhically correct to behave this way. And that Shalom Bayit and the mitzvah of Ona is just as important as being thorough when I perform Tahara HaMishpacha. I'm not going to get into the equation of what mitzvah is more important. But you see her anguish here. And this is a very real thing for men and for women. Nida is one of the areas especially where this comes up. If you look in the answer here, what's beautiful about this answer, similar to Rav Usher Weiss, is that not only did they give a halachic way forward for this woman, but they also recommended, if you look over here, they recommended a psychologist or psychiatrist to help her through it. And I think that's a very important thing. If you look at the last source over here, I really wanted to quote this. I'm excited to because I went to undergrad in YU. There's a professor named Dr. Eliezer Schnall. I took intro to psychology and numerous other psychology courses with him. Very pristine example of Torah Mada. He mixes Torah with psychology all the time. And his work is especially, I think, focused on the Jewish community and on religion. So what they did was they conducted a study where if I have the dates correctly, they took data, and opinions from doctors, mental health professionals in the Orthodox community in the 1980s, and then they checked in again to find out what the opinions were in 2010 when this was released. He says, on one hand, about 50% are telling us that the Orthodox population is at least somewhat underserved. And that's a situation where we are not where we want to be, Schnall told the Jewish Week. But the number of those who, in 1984, said needs are inadequately met was only 10%. Now, the number is 40%. Sorry, not inadequately, adequately met. So from 10% to 40%, more people are now saying in 2010, and I'm assuming it didn't change that much, but hopefully has improved now in 2018, that the Orthodox community is adequately treating mental health issues. But if you look at it, even though it's a huge jump from 10% to 40%, it's still a little bit sad that the majority of people of mental health professionals are of the opinion that mental health needs are not adequately being addressed in the Orthodox community. And I don't have any solution forward, but I think the main thing is to be aware of these issues, and most importantly, to take the final words of Rav Usher Weiss in his tshuva, that this is no different, that mental illness is no different than a physical illness, and we should treat it as such and try to destigmatize it, and that way people will feel comfortable more within the Orthodox community. And hopefully we can find solutions for people in order to heal themselves and to serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu to the best of their ability. Thank you very much, everyone, for coming.